This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
It's my pleasure to welcome Dr. Frederick Graves to the show. He is the founder of a fantastic resource that I've been reading about online for a while now, and that is Jurisdictionary. I think you'll really like what he has to say and learning a little bit more about the legal system today. Frederick, welcome. How are you?
Thank you, Mr. Hartman. We're just fine. We're just right.
Good, good. Just give our listeners a sense of geography. Where are you located?
We're on the east coast of Florida, just north of Fort Lauderdale, about 65 miles.
Well, that's a beautiful area. I've been there a few times myself. So tell us a little bit about your background, if you would, and how you came to start this great website, Jurisdictionary.
Oh, wow. Well, I walked into a library late one afternoon, and the sun was lowering. There was a pinhole in the blind. There was no one else in the library, not even a librarian, and a beam of light shone on some books with gold letters and seemed like I should read them.
Okay.
So I did. I wasn't a lawyer at the time. I worked as a boat builder. I read the books and they led me to read other books, and I kept reading these books and some of the Harvard classics and Franklin and Woolman and Penn and Marcus Aurelius and so forth. But I was just a working class fellow. And when I was 39, I had a friend who had been admitted to law school. And I thought to myself, gosh, if I could get admitted to law school, maybe I could write about these things and get them published. So I went to law school at 39 just to get a degree. Mm-hmm. So people would pay attention to me. And after I got out, I practiced, of course, to try to pay some of the bills from 3 years of law school. And in the process, discovered that there really was a lot more to write about than I had dreamed. And so I began. And it's just been a wonderful adventure so far. We are very much appreciated. And I think we're giving the public something that was never available before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. What type of law did you practice? Were you doing general business law, or what area when you were practicing?
Well, I like to joke and say I was an honest lawyer specializing in winning. But that wouldn't tell you anything. No, mm-hmm. I just started out with basically civil law, did some probate, wills and trusts and litigation, and stayed away from criminal and family. No one's right in those cases.
Mm-hmm.
So I stayed with the side of the law where you can actually be an honest lawyer if you want to be.
Good. Let's talk about some of the defects and the flaws with our system. My personal feeling is the system as it was founded is a pretty darn good system, especially when you look around the world, but it's just become so corrupted. It seems like everybody is in pain. You know, the clients don't like it. They never seem to be very satisfied with the system, but oddly, the clients don't like it. You'd think the lawyers would be winning. But the lawyers I know are not really very happy with their careers usually either. It seems like nobody's really winning. I don't know. Maybe they are, but that's my impression.
Well, I won pretty consistently for 28 years.
Yeah, I don't necessarily mean winning a case per se. I just mean feeling happy about the whole system and the whole result, you know?
Oh,
yeah, just kind of in general.
Well, you're constantly up against a lawyer on the other side who's willing to lie and cheat and steal and twist and devise and, you know, basically slime his way through if you don't know how to stop him, which, of course, is part of my ambition, is to give people the tools and weapons they need to stop the crookedness on the other side. But let me say this, Mr. Hartman, it's very important, I think, for us to understand that, you know, in the days of Charles Dickens, there was no such thing as an honest lawyer. And I remember John Bunyan, you know, that wrote Pilgrim's Progress, you read anything of his books and you find out how he was thrown into prison, there was nothing on the floor but straw. He was in there with women and children, and there were a whole bunch of them crowded in there with no sanitary facilities, all because he wanted to preach the gospel. So I like to think that there some progress has been made. We've slid backwards somewhat in the past, oh, I would say 75 to 100 years, which we probably don't have time to go into right now with the change in the viewpoints of controlling jurisprudence. But on the other hand, what we have is a system that gives us an opportunity, call it a golden opportunity, to make things better once we understand. And may I just add to that, I was just discussing that with my son just this morning, the idea we went up to have his car worked on, and it was making some funny noises. And I said, you know, how would we be able to repair the car if we did not know what it acted like when it was working? So let's think about the courts. How can we repair the courts until we understand the fundamental principles and what it looks like when it's working correctly? And when we do have the ability to subpoena records from the bank or the mortgage company or whatever, where we do have the ability to force somebody to appear for a deposition and answer questions such as Bill Clinton did not answer. And I've often joked with people and said, you know, if I had been the lawyer taking Bill Clinton's deposition, he would have answered the question. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't let him get off with what do you mean by is.
Right. What is the definition of is?
So we would have put a stop to that because as a member of this society, I have the right to get answers to my questions when it seeks material evidence. And we have that right. And the sad thing, Mr. Hartman, is people don't know what power they have. They don't know what tools and weapons they have. And it belongs to each and every one of them. Every one of them. And it's nothing that an eighth grader can't learn. It's that easy to learn.
Gosh, I just don't know where to start with this. You know, it just feels like when people enter into the legal system, you know, on one end, they got victimized by the other party. And so they're going to take them to court. But then after that, they get victimized by their lawyer a second time.
So true.
You know, it's sometimes I don't know which is worse.
But, you know, it's like we took my son's car up to the dealership this morning to have something done for the transmission. And they went back and did whatever they did. And we had an idea what they were going to do. But if they had come out and said, well, it's your radiator has to be replaced. And that's why your transmission is jerking. Well, both my son and I have enough sense to know that the radiator has nothing to do with the transmission. But now take that same thing with people who have legal problems and they need to get a redress for their grievances. They need the judge to sign an order or a judgment setting the world right again. But they don't have any idea. So the other side gets to play its games and the judge is not supposed to interfere. He's supposed to be a referee. And if we don't know how to play the game, then we lose, even though we should have won. But we don't win because we don't understand how to play the game. So we take our car to the dealership and he replaces takes the wheels off and replaces the steering wheel. And we go out of there with a $7,000 bill for something that should have cost $75.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what's wrong. So as I say, the root of the problem is that we don't have public legal education in this country. We have never had public legal education in the history of the world. And now we are fighting for that. That's who we are. That's who you are talking to now. This is who we are, Jurisdictionary and American Justice Foundation. And we are doing the best we can to cause people to begin to realize you've been cheated by being denied the knowledge that here's a problem that requires a little bit of effort, you see. It's like my fifth grade teacher said, I can't open your head and pour it in. You're going to have to make an effort. But it's not that big an effort. And when the American public begins to understand how the court system is supposed to work, what it looks like when it's working correctly, you see, now we can fix it. Because now we know what the problem is instead of just this amorphous blind darkness up there that we can all condemn and throw rotten eggs at without understanding how do we fix it. You can't fix something when you don't know what it looks like when it works. So let's get the American public, as far as that goes, the world public, to understand what does a good court look like? What must it do? Why must it do it? What are the boundaries of what it can do? What are these things that are already there? They already exist. They've been existing for decades. But let's get the American public to understand what they should and can expect from judges and lawyers, and then see to it that we get what we want.
Mm-hmm. So let's dive in and talk about a couple of examples. And I know legal cases are there's so much variety in terms of legal cases, and there are so many things that can happen and so many complexities. But, you know, if you were to pick just a few of the sort of main things that people should understand, main pitfalls that people will face, what would those be? Can you pick a couple of those?
Well, I can think of one right away, and thank you for giving me this opportunity, because this is what I love to do. Many people, for example, they'll hire a lawyer, and the lawyer says, oh, we're going to take the other side's deposition. And then they'll go and take the deposition, and they're paying a court reporter maybe $75 an hour. We're paying the lawyer $300 to $400 an hour. And for the first time, the lawyer is beginning to try to figure out what the case is about. That's wrong, and I'll explain in just a second here.
Mm-hmm.
Before we ever take a deposition, there are three tools that belong to each and every one of you. There are requests for admissions, requests for production, and interrogatories. An interrogatory is nothing but a written question that has to be answered in writing under oath. That's all it is, a written question that has to be answered under oath in writing, and we call it an interrogatory, just to give it a name. We could call it a peach tree. It wouldn't make any difference. So those are your three. Now, you have the ability to ask questions they have to answer under oath in writing before the deposition. You can require them to admit certain things before the deposition. And you can require them to produce documents and things, even to the point of allowing us to go into their barn and look around in the barn to see what's there, if that's material, before we take the deposition. Now we take the deposition, and we don't have to spend 2 or 3 days at $400 an hour. We can get in there, and in an hour's time, we know what the case is about. We know what they have in the way of documents. We know what they've said in answer to these questions and requests for admissions. And now we use the deposition to put them under oath, under penalties of perjury, and many times win the case right then and there in an hour's time, saving the client huge amounts of money. But the American public doesn't have a clue, and I don't think that's right. I think the bar has a moral responsibility that we are foolish to expect them to own up to. So American Justice Foundation and Jurisdictionary are taking up the slack the best we can, and with the help of wonderful people like you, we're getting the word out.
You know, it is amazing to me how the Bar Association seems to be nothing more than a club for lawyers, like a protection racket for lawyers, rather than a consumer advocacy group as they, I think, bill themselves to be. Thoughts on bar associations?
The main thing that I see with the bar that troubles me and puzzles me is, for example, our local bar here in Florida, they make an effort. They want to be patted on the back for going into the schools and telling the schools about the Constitution of the United States. What I don't understand is, why are we not going into the schools and teaching the children the fundamentals? You know, I could tell you the story of Hadley versus Baxendale, or the Paulsgraf case where the old lady got bumped when a firecracker went off at the train station. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand what these cases stand for. They're all very, very simple. And we could be teaching those things to our children. But instead, as you say, sadly, what used to be a profession and did have, I think, more honorable people then than now, has become a business. Here in Florida, it won't be long before we probably only have maybe 10 law firms that have enough money to advertise, that are just pushing everybody else out. It's a sad state of affairs. But I have reached a conclusion that rather than trying to change the bar, that we fill the American public with the wisdom and the knowledge and the creative genius to be able to control the bar. And I don't see any hope any other way. And I think hopefully that you would agree with me that there's certainly nothing wrong with our children beginning to learn, for example, the fundamental maxims of common law and things like that. And understanding Kirksey versus Kirksey and Hadley versus Baxendale, all of which can be explained to a child. And the child comes away understanding, for example, in Hadley versus Baxendale, if both parties did not agree that a delay was going to make somebody responsible for lost profits, well, then we shouldn't give the person lost profits. when the delay was unforeseen, and so forth and so on. These are things that children can understand, perhaps better than adults, but the bar makes no reasonable, legitimate, honest effort to reveal what justice is. It's just not right.
You know, I mean, this is just an example of, I mean, lawyers have their own language, doctors have their own language, and these various professions do this to maintain their pseudo-monopolies because they can keep people from understanding it. If the consumer's uninformed, they can do what they want. They can charge what they want. They can do what they want because, you know, no one's there to really hold their feet to the fire.
I think that's partially true. On the other hand, I would challenge you and your listeners that there probably aren't more than two dozen terms, legal terms, that I've run into in 28 years of being a lawyer that are hard to understand. They're not hard to understand.
Mm-hmm.
A deposition is simply when you get somebody in a room with a court reporter who puts them under oath. I get to ask them questions that the court reporter writes down the questions and the answers. It's just called a deposition. There's nothing magical about that any more than a megabyte or a gigabyte or a hard drive or RAM or any of these things that we've all learned how to do with computers. The problem, Mr. Hartman, is not that there's a secret language. The problem is that the knowledge is nowhere available for the public. It's never been presented to the public in any way. Now, hear me. Never been presented to the public in any way that would be anywhere near digestible. And the amazing thing is, we went through 3 years of law school with what's called the Langdell method, and all we did was read cases. We read appellate court opinions for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, any one of these cases can be explained with a cartoon.
Right.
It's not difficult.
It's amazing. Let me get your thoughts on, we'll call it hacking the legal system. Certainly one way to hack the legal system is with good education, and that's what your group is all about. But one of the interesting things is lawyers that work at big firms, you know, they might bill out at $300 an hour, for example, or even more. And the lawyer is only making about $75 an hour, typically. And what I've had some admittedly mixed results with is hiring attorneys directly, you know, solopreneur type attorneys directly off of even Craigslist of all things. You know, I've gotten some gems. I've gotten some bad ones too. It's a mixed bag. But I sort of wonder, you know, because before I did this, you know, when you walk into a big law firm, I mean, I've gotten some crummy lawyers too and paid a fortune. You know, if you're going to get a crummy lawyer, at least try not to spend too much money. That's kind of my recent philosophy. Do you have any thoughts about that? And the other cost that's just amazingly high in the legal process is what you've talked about already is depositions. I wish there was some way to hack the court reporter fees because those are enormous. I mean, it'll cost you as much as your attorney will.
Well, for example, people who know what my course teaches, they can write the request for admissions. They can write the interrogatories. They know what's material and what is not. They know what's admissible and what is not.
Mm-hmm.
An eighth grader can understand everything that I teach in my courses.
Sure.
Okay, so now let's do it my way. Let's don't give the lawyer $20,000 and let him fly to Paris to take depositions for a week. You know, all right. Instead, what we'll do is we'll use the written discovery tools, and maybe we'll find out everything we need and we don't have to take a deposition, and we do it on paper, mm-hmm. in writing. Let me tell a quick story. I had a fellow come to me one time and he was divorced. He had never signed a credit card application or anything, but his wife had a credit card and she'd gotten it in both their names. Now Sears Roebuck sued him for bills that she had run up. So he didn't have a lot of money. So I just did this pro bono and I said, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to send them a request for production. That's what it's called. It's one of those three written tools that you have, that I have, that everyone has, if they only knew how to use them and knew they existed. So we sent them a request for production. It was real simple. Produce all documents that support your cause bearing my client's name.
Okay.
They only had 30 days to answer under the rules here in Florida. And 28th day, I got a phone call from a young lawyer down in West Palm Beach. And she says, we need more time. I said, well, I'm not going to give you any more time. You've had 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks. And she says, oh, but you're not being fair. I said, oh, I'm being quite fair. The rule gave you plenty of time. Either you have the documents or you don't have the documents. And she says, well, you're not very kind. I said, well, that's not about being kind. you're not being very kind suing my client when you don't have any documents to show that he owes any money. And he's just a hardworking guy. He's strapped. He can't pay this bill. It's not his bill anyway. Well, we'll just take it to the judge. I said, no, I'll take it to the judge. I'll go to the judge and we'll get it all straightened out. I'll set it for hearing. And she says, what can I do? I said, you can dismiss the case. So they dismissed the case. How many documents did I prepare, Mr. Hartman?
Yeah, not much. That was pretty easy, huh?
One document.
Yeah.
I requested them to produce one thing that they have to produce, and they didn't produce it. Now, I could have told this man, you know, do you own a home? Do you own a car? Can you borrow money on your car? Can we get a mortgage on your home? And you bring me $20,000, I'll make this all go away. I didn't do that. I prepared one document. It was a page and a half. Maybe it was only one page. And that was it. It took me, I don't know, 12 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But the point that I would like people to understand is when you understand what my course teaches, you can do this yourself. It's not rocket science.
Right, right.
That's what's exciting to me. If it was rocket science and you had to be a genius to know how to do all this stuff, well, I wouldn't have been around for 17 years on the internet.
Right.
But it is not rocket science. It's very easy to understand and do.
Yeah, I love that. It really is not rocket science. And you know, people can be empowered with this knowledge. Let me ask you just a couple questions before you go about some things in the system. I wanted to get your thoughts on arbitration.
Well, if you sign a contract and you agree that if there becomes a dispute, that you will submit the matter to arbitration, then it's a little difficult for me to see how people can complain later on because they have to go to arbitration. They agreed to it.
Right.
It reminds me of the story that we hear from the gospel where there was the man who worked in the vineyard. He came early in the morning. The vineyard owner promised him a penny. Then another man came later in the day and the vineyard owner promised him a penny. And another man came much later in the day, and the vineyard man said, well, you go ahead and work till sundown, I'll give you a penny. And the first guy that came early in the morning complained about it. He said, well, these guys didn't work as long as I did, and you gave them a penny. You owe me more money. But the message was, you agreed for a penny. Why are you complaining to me now?
Right, right. Okay, so that's, you know, once it's in the contract, of course, but I would say, you know, at first, I mean, my personal feeling is I think arbitration is a bit of a scam because they know who their repeat customer is. It's the defendant, the person who put it in the contract or the company that put it in the contract, number one.
Don't sign it.
Yeah, I agree. And it's amazing how these arbitration clauses are just being forced down people's throat everywhere you look nowadays.
No, they're not. Forgive me.
You go to the doctor, you're going to sign an arbitration clause.
Well, don't go there. Go somewhere else.
Well, yeah. Not as easy as it seems sometimes.
Well, let's go back to what we talked about earlier today. Okay, we all know that lawyers make a lot of money if they can stay busy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you're in business and you have a company and you sell vacuum cleaners or whatever, and if you can get your customers to sign an arbitration agreement instead of allowing them to sue you, you know, when the vacuum cleaner eats the dog, then you save tens of thousands of dollars on legal fees defending cases against attorneys who are going to play every dirty, stinking, nasty trick.
I agree with you, but I don't know that you save any money in arbitration. I mean, you've got to pay for this private kangaroo court. You know, we already pay taxes to have a court system. Why not use the free one? And then, you know, the arbitrator, of course, doesn't really have to follow the law, unfortunately. You know, they have conflicts of interest.
Draw a line through the arbitration.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Draw a line. Don't sign it.
Yeah. I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on that. And so, you know, don't sign it is the first good rule. So good advice there. Yeah, definitely.
I think that's a good rule.
But, you know, sometimes it just comes with the territory. You know, that's what I'm saying. But, we don't need to belabor that point. The other thing I wanted to ask you is about out-of-town lawyers and, you know, the issue of lawyers who contribute to judges' campaigns and hang out with judges socially. You know, there's an old saying in law, good lawyer knows the law, a great lawyer knows the judge. I just wanted to get your thoughts on what happens when someone hires a lawyer who's not a local attorney, you know, whether that's good or bad, because maybe they did or didn't contribute to a judge's campaign, or they do or don't socialize with a judge, or, you know, just get your thoughts on the general conflict of interest issue.
Oh, I will. I, not too many years ago, I was attending a hearing on behalf of my client. The attorney on the other side at the hearing actually said at the hearing, "You know, Judge, we go way back, you and I." And I caught that. I pay attention to what's being said.
Right.
And I said to the judge, I said, "Well, you know, Your Honor, my court reporter is sitting there, so I will have my way today." And I got my way.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a court reporter. If you go to court without a court reporter, you go to a hearing without a court reporter, you go to a trial without a court reporter, you might as well shoot yourself in the foot. Because
So do you mean bring your own court reporter?
If you have to.
Oh, wow. Okay.
If you have to. And if you win, you can recover the costs.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is, it's all about holding the judge's feet to the fire.
Mm-hmm.
28 years, I lost one case. 28 years.
Wow, that's an impressive record for sure. Yeah.
Well, I was older when I went to law school. I wasn't, you know, totally wet behind the ears at 39 years old. I'd been around the block a few times and had a little bit of sense about what humanity is all about. So I never trusted judges. I certainly never trusted lawyers on the other side. I use the rules. I get my evidence. I get it in the record. I get every word on the record. I have a court. I don't have to pay for the transcript if I don't need it, but I've got it there if I want it. And if I have a judge that wants to play hijinks with me or play high-handed with me, I appeal, and I've got the record, and then I win on appeal.
Mm-hmm.
The thing, Mr. Hartman, I so want people to understand from our little discussion today is you can do it too. There's a way to do it where you're not giving carte blanche to the judge. You know, you tie his hands. You say, "Look, here are the rules. We're all going to obey them today, and I will win because the law's on my side. The facts are on my side. I've got my evidence in. I got all the evidence in I need to win. I win. Thank you. Goodbye."
Right.
And it's over. And now we get back to our life.
Mm-hmm.
But people who don't want to make a little tiny bit of effort to learn how to do this, you almost want to say they don't deserve justice if they won't make any effort at all. And to hire a lawyer and not have any idea whether he's honest or what he's going to do for you, he slaps you on the back and says, "You know, how's the wife and kids? It's so nice to see you again. It's blah, blah, blah." And you walk out the door and all you are to him is a dollar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not right. It's foolishness.
Yep.
So you learn how to do this. And then when you take the car to the dealer and he wants to replace your radiator and your lock on your trunk or whatever it is, you say, "No. It's the transmission. If you don't know how to fix the transmission, get away from my car and I'll take it somewhere else."
Yep, absolutely. Well, good stuff. Very interesting. Well, give out your website if you would and tell people a little bit about your course real quickly.
It was Jurisdictionary for years. It still is Jurisdictionary. You can get there going to Jurisdictionary, but it's hard to remember sometimes. But it's howtowinincourt.com.
Mm-hmm. Howtowinincourt.com. What do you offer there?
Everything. How to use the rules to win. It's not about substance law. We're not going to teach you about foreclosures. We're not going to teach you about, you know, different things like that. We're going to teach you how to file pleadings, how to get motions, how to get evidence in, how to control the judge, how to prepare for appeal, everything you need to know in the way of how to win the game, how to play the game, how to keep the other side from cheating. It's how to make courtroom objections and why. It's all there. If everything is there about how to win in court, that's why we call it that. But again, it's just people have to be willing to make a little bit of an effort. You know, I've dedicated my life to this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly made an effort on my part. And the people that have my course, they're making an effort and they're winning. I talked to a guy at the dealership this morning. A man came up to me. He heard me speaking to my son. And he said, "Are you Frederick Graves?" I said, "Yes." He said, "You're the smartest lawyer of our time." And I said, "Well, that's pretty much." And he said, "No, I have your course. I've won 5 lawsuits with your course."
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah.
He's just a contractor.
Did he do those pro se or with lawyers or a blend?
He had lawyers.
Yeah.
Wasn't getting anywhere. Paid the lawyer $17,000. Got my course. Did things my way and won. True story. I'm not making it up. It actually happened this morning. And it happens all the time. People, truck drivers, single moms, people that, because it's the how to win in court is not rocket science.
Mm-hmm. Good, good.
You don't have to be particularly smart. You just have to be able to put 2 and 2 together and do things a certain way. And an interrogatory, for example, is just a question in writing that has to be answered in writing under oath. It's not hard. If we can remember gigabyte, gee, I know what a gigabyte is. Most people today know what a gigabyte is. So how is the word interrogatory any harder to learn than gigabyte?
I don't
think it is.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, good stuff. Very interesting. Empowering people, jurisdictionary.com or howtowinoncourt.com. And Frederick Graves, thank you for joining us today.
Not how to win on court.
Or
how
in
to
court.
Win in
yeah,
court.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Mr. Hartman, thank you so much for helping other people to learn that there is hope.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guests' opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.